This is Geeks and Jocks. And welcome back to Geeks and Jocks, episode 115, recording May 17th, 2022. This is Ryan Sullivan. Glad to have you listeners here. Before getting into this episode, this podcast is on Anchor.fm. You can also find us on Spotify, Radio Public, and Google Podcasts. So head on down to those places, search for Geeks and Jocks. Plenty of content awaits you. So it might be kind of a shorter episode, may not, but not really a whole lot to discuss. Definitely be talking about some domestic violence as far as sports go, and some sports drama for hockey and basketball. Talk about what's going on in the theater with the latest box office. Talk about some Doom and maybe one or two other gaming related stuff. Other than that, might be a rather quick podcast for this particular week. Let's get going, I guess. Hockey, I mean, it's unbelievable just how many lengthy playoff series there was, especially considering Sunday that there was two game sevens and they both ended in overtime wins. The Calgary Flames, I believe, beat the Dallas Stars in overtime 3-2, and 4-3 was the final for the New York Rangers beating the Pittsburgh Penguins. I mean, it's the type of stuff, and this is one of the things that I'll mention, is this is more of a thing of my father. He is the type of guy that he loves the Rangers, but he doesn't really watch much of the regular season. He's more of a postseason type of guy because he thinks that's when it gets more intense. They play better. They skate harder. They hit harder. Like, they play with so much tenacity. That's what he loves about that type of hockey. And he considered the Game 1 game to be one of the greatest games he ever watched for any sport, even though the Rangers lost in triple overtime. I mean, it's just crazy how that game went. Like, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Not too long into the overtime period, it's setting itself up for some good heroics. Like, I'm not making that up. But yeah, just take a quick look and see who's in the running now. Oops, wrong sport. We got Tampa Bay Lightning facing the Florida Panthers. Panthers advance to another round for the first time since the 1996 playoffs. That's pretty good. We got the Colorado Avalanche in their series. They'll be facing the St. Louis Blues. Tampa Bay Lightning trying to repeat again that they're facing the Panthers. Rangers facing off against the Carolina Hurricanes. And the Edmonton Oilers facing off against Calgary. Should be pretty interesting to see what happens there. Now, the NBA setting itself up to be one of those type of situations that could be, I mean, it's going to be another new champion. And there was a tweet I saw with the fifth straight season, first time since 75 through 79 that there was new champions every year. And right now it's between Miami Heat and the Boston Celtics in the Eastern Conference. And then you have Dallas Mavericks with a really impressive win in Game 7 against the Phoenix Suns facing the Golden State Warriors. Sorry, I'll talk about something else in a second. But Philadelphia getting their butts kicked, and it's just another season where Doc Rivers, as per usual, can't even get past the second round or even get back into the NBA Finals. It is absolutely crazy, just, you know, how bad some of those players get. I don't know if it's just the players in themselves. There's always a lot of criticism stemmed towards James Harden and a few others. Or maybe just the coaching strategy of Doc Rivers, what might have worked when he coached the Celtics, and maybe the Clippers to a lesser extent might have worked, but in this case, it's not working. And while there is tons of success, and he's not the only other coach in any sport to have all that type of success in the regular season and falter in the playoffs, but it just seems like it's more noticeable, I think, with each passing year. Whether they choke on purpose or not, I don't know. It's hard to really tell. And Milwaukee, I mean, Giannis is a fantastic player, but with injuries for the Bucks, just can only do so much, unfortunately. Warriors getting business done, though they'll have to be doing this without Gary Payton for a while. In the likelihood he could come back, I mean, there's a possibility, I would think, but 3 to 5 weeks with a fractured elbow. They better be pinning their hopes on reaching the finals. But Dallas is on a roll right now, so who knows how that series pans out. But definitely both series should reach 6 games or so. Miami facing Boston and Golden State versus Dallas. Miami, it's hard to imagine that it keeps seeing the Heat continue to have this sort of success. Maybe it's just the way Eric Spoelstra commands his team. He finds ways to get his players, whether they're long-term veterans or newcomers, they find ways to win. And even before Spoelstra, I mean, they've had a lot of success within the last 25 years or so, maybe a little longer, but they've been a premier franchise and one of the Miami teams you should focus on. Now, in the case of the Phoenix Suns, a lot of criticism stemmed towards Chris Paul, to the point where Patrick Beverly trashing Paul on First Take, on that ESPN show. Patrick Beverly is the last guy that I would want on a talk show. Because what he is a mouth breather, a loud mouth who's had an okay career, but he's a dirty player, and he's just a cancer to the league, except for the team that he's on. Complaining about the Paul on a losing team. Didn't your team choke double digit leads 3 times against the Grizzlies? I think someone needs to sit him down and just tell him, dude, keep your mouth shut. I think his mouth will get him in trouble beyond his career. I don't know what to say. It's just, he just keeps finding ways to keep shooting himself in the foot. And speaking of that, Rajon Rondo threatening a girlfriend with a gun. I knew that guy was cuckoo at times, but to be that cuckoo, nah. I wouldn't think someone like him would be like that. But then again, we've seen mental issues occur at points throughout his career. And that says something. And really, I mean, it's just, it's kind of sad to see it happen. You know, mental health is definitely a huge issue, and that's something I'll bring up for a brief moment. The shooting that occurred in Buffalo, New York, where a psychotic teenager, or should I say young adult, opened fire in a grocery store that was in a predominantly black neighborhood, killing 10 black people and I think like 2 or 3 white people, I think it was. Maybe it might have been 11 blacks and 2 whites. And this was a kid from the news reports that threatened a school and had some really bad mental health issues. And of course, this will obviously be a hate crime. This is the type of stuff that definitely targeting a specific race to cause mayhem and bloodshed. It's just, mental health is, I think it's largely ignored, and I feel like we're not doing a really good effort, in my opinion, to evaluate people's health. And I don't know if it's just difficult to judge or not, but we got to do a way better job. We got to do a way better job than this to prevent stuff like this from happening and to stop these type of hate crimes from occurring. Anyway, returning to basketball, one of the big things going on right now, a few months ago, Brittany Griner detained in Russia over a drug charge, and right now, WNBA players, a couple of them, particularly Breanna Stewart, trying to get the White House to try and get Griner out of there. And I mean, I'm sorry she's detained, but she put this on herself, Griner, and I would like to think Breanna Stewart's a lot smarter than when she opens her mouth at times, or when she tweets, because there are far more pressing matters, and I mean, hate to be offensive, far more pressing matters than a WNBA player who is detained for committing a crime in another country. Some places in America, the laws are strict, but outside of the United States, probably a bit lenient, and vice versa. There's probably some lenient stuff here in the United States that are much stricter over in other parts of the world. It's not that complicated. And most people, for the most part, would obviously check to see what the laws are and to be careful of what they're doing. And Griner was pretty foolish, in my opinion. And with all the stuff going on with economic issues, shortages, and obviously that shooting in Buffalo, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have much more pressing matters to worry about. They got a lot more on their plate than a WNBA player. And there was something from a while ago about pay equality needing to be better for the WNBA. That's not going to happen, I don't think. There isn't enough interest to draw people into the sport. There just isn't. Hate to say that, but it's the cold reality. If people actually went to the games, if people, I would say even if the WNBA promoted their own players, showcased some of these big names, they would, I think, do better. But I think it's just, along with other sports that have females in them, they just don't draw anything, no matter what. Maybe high school you get people, but that's just parents and maybe friends. Outside of that, college, you get more interest out of men's college sports than you do women's. I mean, that's not me trying to play the sexist card or anything like that, but that's the truth. I mean, I've seen some college girls' games where there's barely anybody. You might get some people. You might get a little more for men's sports, but again, you're not getting a lot of people. But there's a lot more, I think, favored towards seeing a men's game versus a women's game. That's at least how I see it. But yeah, I mean, there's the pay equality is not going to do anything good for the WNBA, especially for them to keep bleeding money every year. And even if NBA players try to help fix the situation, it's not going to solve anything. I don't think it will. But yeah. And lastly, the 23XL group. Hard to believe, but Kurt Busch. Seriously. He got his win at Kansas this past Sunday. His first of the year. So that says a lot for the 23XL group led by, I believe it was Michael Jordan and I believe Magic Johnson or someone else. What's the 23XI Racing? I thought it was XL. 23XI founded by Denny Hamlin and Jordan. I thought Magic was involved. I might be thinking of some other sport. Yeah. But obviously a big deal given, you know, that they give a platform to Bubba Wallace. And actually, Wallace had a really good race this past Sunday, finishing 10th. So that says a lot. And I'll talk about the 45 car for a second. But here's your top 10. Kyle Larson was the runner-up. Kyle Busch finished 3rd. Denny Hamlin 4th. Christopher Bell 5th. Martin Truex Jr. 6th. Ross Chastain 7th. Ricky Stenhouse 8th, Alex Bowman 9th, and Bubba at 10th. Some of the other notables include Austin Cindric 11th, Ryan Blaney 12th, Austin Dillon 13th, Brad Keselowski 14th, Kevin Harvick 15th, William Byron 16th, Joey Logano 17th, Harrison Burton 21st, Chase Briscoe 24th, Eric Almirola 26th, Chase Elliott 29th, so that hurts him a little bit as far as his standings go. Tyler Reddick 30th, Eric Jones 32nd, and that's about it as far as notable drivers. So as far as the point standing goes, the points do drop a little bit for Elliott, but he still has a sizable lead for the most part. 475. Blaney is 2nd with 423. And not too far behind are Kyle Busch, William Byron, and Ross Chastain, 3rd through 5th. Martin Truex at 6th. Joey Logano, 7th. Alex Bowman, 8th. Kyle Larson, 9th. And Christopher Bell, 10th. So, interesting cabaret of people. Be interesting to see what goes on next. Have a fair warning, though. There's something that I saw on my Google search just now. Be careful with milkshakes. Yeah. So, I guess there's a story that an Arby's night manager accused of urinating in milkshake mix. Now, I know there's stories of people getting sick from milkshakes. I think it comes from certain parts. I think some people get sick from like cleaning material that unfortunately gets into a milkshake. But Washington State accused of, I guess, being investigated. That's absolutely gross. Like that's just, how do you explain that? Hopefully that guy finds himself never working a fast food job or any food job ever again. It's just gross. So, moving on to the movies, get something to cleanse our minds. Not a lot to really say. Doctor Strange 2, number 1 again. But a pretty big drop altogether, 61.8 million according to BoxOfficeMojo.com. The numbers aren't bad for Doctor Strange, but people are expecting Disney to get Spider-Man type numbers. I don't know what to tell you. But still, 292 million domestically, 397 million internationally, nearing 690 altogether. It's still going to be producing some big numbers, and I wouldn't be surprised if it reaches $1 billion as well. I mean, that should easily get to $1 billion. I would think it's by the time it finishes up its run in theaters. So this will definitely be like the true big hit for Marvel and Disney as far as their latest batch of Marvel movies. And really, no other movie really did all that great. The Bad Guys at $7 million for the weekend, and the numbers, it's not anything great. I mean, as far as the type of overall numbers, $165 million altogether, 66 plus domestically, 99 plus mil internationally. Still holding on a little bit. I mean, it's still finding an audience, kind of. I'd like to see what the drop was as a whole. Sonic the Hedgehog 2, number 3, at 4.7 million. So it's still holding on. It's just a matter of what next comes for kids' films. 175 million now, domestically, internationally, 179. Over 355 million altogether. The new release this past weekend was Firestarter, which is based on the Stephen King book, Disastrous. 3.8 million domestically, 2 million internationally. There's just something about Stephen King that I think it's hard to know what type of stuff he makes that does well and what fails. Like It, for example, those movies did pretty well, but then you have something like that follow-up to The Shining that wasn't exactly lighting the world on fire. I mean, I don't know, was the original one in 84 a hit at all? Because I don't think it was either. And not too far behind at number 5, Everything Everywhere All at Once. Still doing relatively okay. 47 million domestically. I don't know what the budget is, but it seems like it might have had an okay budget. At least that's how I view it. I just want to see what the drop were. Okay, so 26.5 drop for The Bad Guys, which that's not too bad. 22.7 for Sonic 2. That's not too bad. And just a less than 6% drop for Everything Everywhere All at Once. That's pretty good. Finishing out the top 10. Fantastic Beasts 3. 2.5 million. Altogether 90 million. Kind of be a struggle to get to 100 million though. Number 7, The Northman, made a little over 1.7 million. And its numbers altogether, 31 million. The Lost City, still hanging around a little bit. 1.6 million, almost to 1.7. Reaching itself to 97 million. A small release, Family Camp, 1.3, almost to 1.4 million. And rounding out the top 10, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent made just over $1 million. So its totals, 18 million. So as far as other releases go, a few limited stuff and then a couple big name films coming out. One is Downton Abbey, A New Era. That one was a huge hit. The first movie that came out a few years ago, that was like talk of the town, I think, for a while. Well received, well commercial success. 29 million internationally altogether right now. So I would think this would be a movie that gets. I would think this would be like a movie that makes 20 million. like for opening weekend, I would think people want to go see it. And the other big release is Men. Is this supposed to be another horror film or something? Holy crap. A young woman goes on a solo vacation to the English countryside following the death of her ex-husband. Is this supposed to be a drama or is this supposed to be some sort of horror film, judging by the poster that I'm looking at here? Let's see what the limited releases are, because today is a movie called Vendetta. Okay. This looks like a weird film. Is that Mike Tyson? Okay, now I gotta look. I really gotta look. Who is in this movie? I see Thomas Jane's name is in there. So I am genuinely curious. This probably don't look like a good... Bruce Willis, Mike Tyson, Clive Standen, Thomas Jane, and Theo Rossi. I'm assuming there's Jackie Moore. Probably the plot line being her getting killed or something, if I had to assume so. So this looks like to be one of the last movies that will be held on by to have Bruce Willis because of his health issue. So that'll be interesting. That's a limited release. I'm kind of surprised. You think a Bruce Willis movie would be nationwide film, but especially if you have someone like Thomas Jane in there too. But Mike Tyson as a star? I mean he's one of the great boxers of all time, but oh my god. I'm sorry. It's just that's amusing. I mean, when I think Mike Tyson in a film, I'm thinking The Hangover where he punches Zach Galifianakis. Let's see what other limited releases we got here. Digger, a Western Revisited. Looks like a combination of like a motorbike person and probably growing up on a Western farm, if I had to assume so. Kind of not interested. Let's see, 2000 Mules, documentary on the alleged... way too early to be making a film based on the 2020 election. Way too early. This is probably one of those films that's probably not even going to see a nationwide release, and for good reason. I mean, whether you think that happened or not, I don't know. Those type of films never do well. Got a film called Distant. Looks like a foreign film from the sounds of it. And I don't know, probably won't do all that well either. Let's see, we got Hold Your Fire. A film about a guy trying to steal guns for self-defense in 1972, starting the longest hostage siege in NYPD history. Shuaib Rahim, trying to steal guns for self-defense, and psychologist Harvey Schlossberg fighting to reform police use of violence. Alright, so this is one of those political films. Yeah, there's probably a good reason why some of these movies are limited release. To see if they even test out well in front of audiences. And if they don't, they don't. And a bunch of limited films the following week as well. Definitely talk about those later at another time. So when you go on Google search, there's stuff that you find all around, and one of those is I guess there were some Girl Scout murders. Way back in the 70s, I think. And one of the people opening up, out of all the people, Kristen Chenoweth, who, by the way, has a pretty good singing voice. And if you hear her at some point in some movies, or I think she does Broadway, if I'm not mistaken. But twist of fate that saved her from being a victim in the 1977 Girl Scout murders. It's almost like that thing. It's like, if I wasn't there that day, or like if I was there that day, that is Keeper of the Ashes, the Oklahoma Girl Scout murders. Opening up about a tragic moment from her. Wow. This is a four-part docuseries on Hulu that premieres next week on the 24th. Explores the killings of Lori Lee Farmer, 8, Michelle Heather Goose, 9, and Doris Denise Milner, 10, during a June 1977 Girl Scouts trip to Camp Scott. Local jail escapee Gene Leroy Hart was arrested at the time, and although he was acquitted in 79, recent DNA evidence suggests his involvement. So, looks like they're on the search for who could be the potential killer. And if someone else, like, try and find that person, and if that person killed anyone else, or did anything brutal, I mean, that's gotta be, like, one of the more, oof. This is from people.com right now, so I'm just looking at this. That's gotta be, like, someone that sinks her heart down at times. This is what the article. I remember I should have been on that trip. I had gotten sick, and Mom said you can't go. Chenoweth recounts. It stuck with me my whole life. I could have been one of them. Well, I'm sure it isn't gnawing at her all the time. It's one of those things like the what, you know, what if. So last week released the results of some 2019 DNA tests at the request of the victims' families ahead of the docuseries premiere, according to Tulsa World. Although officially inconclusive, the results point to Hart, who died in 1979 while in prison on unrelated charges. That's just, that is nutty. There's some bad things that happen to some actors or actresses where there's, like, some encounters. Like, what if I was on this particular plane or ship or around in this part of town? Like, that is absolutely nutty. Absolutely nutty. Like, ouch. I'm at a loss of words, actually, if I'm being honest. But I think it's one of those things, like, there's something about real-life crime that drives people to see this stuff and to see whether people are innocent, people are guilty. It just seems like that's what I'm noticing more and more. It's just, we are so much in love with these documentaries about the past, and whether it's a cabaret of people that work together, or, you know, certain things that we may not know the whole truth about, or info that might not have been present at a particular point in time, but it's just, it makes for good TV, regardless of reception. It's one of those type of things you probably want to talk about when you're at work, you know, or at a water cooler. And honestly, I'm not the biggest TV guy, but one of the things that I like going to at times is putting it on YouTube. And certain things that I'll put on YouTube is, I don't know, I'm getting this hunkering for stuff like Bar Rescue, for example, where John Taffer goes to rescue bars and turn them into successes. And sometimes some bars stick around, do well, the people change, they do things for the better. Other times they may not. But one of the other things that I've kind of had hunkering for, as hard as that is to believe, is Kitchen Nightmares. And that's the show that was on for a good 6-7 years on Fox, where Chef Gordon Ramsay is on a tour of America to see what is wrong with some of these restaurants and why their food is crap, why the people that are running it or working in there are crap. And I find it fascinating because there's nothing more disappointing than going into a kitchen or working in the kitchen and seeing preparation not being up to snuff, food not being at the right temperatures, and same thing applying to Bar Rescue a little bit as well, the food not being up to quality. Like, there's an episode, for example, Chappies trying to do for a Kitchen Nightmares, where some of the Louisiana type cooking is not translating well, and the chef is basically a lazy son of a gun. It looks like something that you wouldn't want to serve to anybody, and ugh. I mean, there's been some interesting food stuff that I've been seeing, really, too. I mean, it's kind of, I'm kind of more interested in some of the stuff that Gordon Ramsay is doing. Like, this is a really renowned chef, and he knows what a kitchen should be doing inside and out. You know, whether that's scripted for television or not is up to you. I just think there's some pretty good effort altogether to make sure that these places get back to being top quality and to light a fire and spark interest in fixing the place again. I'm actually kind of curious about the Hell's Kitchen stuff, which is still going to be on the air. And that's actually, as far as a while ago, talking about Fox shows, that show's been on for a long time, since 2005. I'm actually kind of curious about that stuff a little bit now, to see how that fares, because obviously there's a high standard for Gordon Ramsay. Really high standard. And not too long ago, within the last week or two, there was a... Where was it? Where is it? There was something... Yeah, here it is. Food Insider. This one is pretty interesting. I'm assuming like an Insider magazine or something. There's a thing they have, Food Wars. One of the things that they're doing is some places in the UK, as far as food goes, versus, well, really USA versus other parts of the world. Like, there's one with UK, for example. There's one I saw recently. I love Burger King. I think, as far as fast food goes, they, to me, are one of the best. Now, prices have gone up a bit recently, and definitely can cut it out, can cut fast food out for a good while. Do it like a one-time thing a month or something as like a special treat. But there was just interesting, like, specific foods that you can't get in America versus specific foods you can't get in Japan, like a teriyaki burger, for example. You can only get it in Japan. Texas double Whopper, you can only get in America. I find it pretty fascinating, and some places have better sizes in Japan versus America and vice versa. Actually, looking at some of the sizes here, holy crap. Looking at some UK stuff here right now, looking at it on a TV. UK McDonald's, smaller drink sizes versus what you get in America. Looks like some of the nugget stuff they're showing right now from the looks of it. I do like some nuggets though. Looks like a four. I didn't realize you could get 40 piece nuggets together, unless it's like one of those type of things where you have to order it via an app online. Oh my goodness. Oh my God. Looks like they're showing some stuff for like fries. Like snack size. Looks like small, medium. Actually, the small, medium, and large. Looks like the fries are about roughly the same, but in weight. Ooh, 7 ounces in America, about 4.6 ounces in the UK. That is nutty. Looks like they're gonna test out the Big Mac. Sorry for this is sounding like watching a video reaction type thing, but it's fascinating and it tells you about our culture a little bit. What some stuff might be better in terms of portions in America versus UK and other parts of the world and vice versa. It's just I don't know what to tell you. Anyway, now finish it up. This is kind of a shorter podcast, but still gotta do a podcast. I wanna talk Doom. Talked a little bit about Wolfenstein the last couple of weeks. Talk some Doom a little bit because a couple mods have kind of caught my interest a little bit lately, and one that I've been kind of aware of for a good while, and one that I've played the WoD of about a little over 6 years ago, maybe 7 years ago. So I'm going to start with the one called Doom Resurrection. So this has been around since this past October, and it's a version of Doom for the Sega 32X, and it's a system that was, well, not a system exactly, but an add-on for the Sega Genesis, and it was a colossal failure. One of its launch games was Doom, and while not a horrible game, it was far from a good from a great port due to the music not being anywhere great, enemies facing you, the pixelation being a little worse, one or two other things. It plays fine, it's just not the type of game I would fully recommend. As far as 32X games go, I would still want to pick it up though, even with its shortcomings. 15 levels compared to the Atari Jaguar version and really any other version of Doom at that time that would come out later. Kind of a little sad, but still plays okay. So it strived to make the 32X version of Doom look, sound, and play a lot better with far more content. Let's take a look. Going to romhacking.com and looking at the description. The patch completely replaces the original engine, adding performance improvements and new features, as well as missing levels from the Jaguar port. Network support via the Zero Tolerance, aka Technopop Link cable. So, if you have an emulator cart, emulation cart, like an EverDrive or something along that line, you could play this and probably hook up two Sega Genesis systems, or it's two Sega 32Xs, although that would probably cause a power outage. Two TVs, two copies of the same thing, so split screen co-op and deathmatch modes, which was a feature on the Jaguar version, and I know the PlayStation version had that too. Super Nintendo did have X-Band features for Doom, but it wasn't all that great. New title screen that resembles the Saturn and PlayStation versions. Rendering has been spread across both SH2 processors for better speed, probably to avoid potential slowdowns in some spots. User input is processed at 30 frames per second while game logic runs at 15. Low and 3 high detail video modes, kind of similar to what the PC version had. Anamorphic widescreen support for 16x9 screens. Improved visual fidelity, high color mode, so being able to put on more colors. FM synth soundtrack, courtesy of Spoonie Bard. Selecting between no music, VGM, FM music, or playing music from an attached Sega CD. So, yeah, add even more power, cause even more of a power outage. Stereo panning for game sounds, controller hot plug-in support, save RAM support, keeps track of finished levels, health, armor, weapons, and ammo, 8 slave slots, as well as an autosave at the end of each level. That's pretty cool. Includes levels that were omitted from the original release, restores sprite directions from the Jaguar version, as well as infighting between monsters. You can only face enemies forward in the original 32X version. Spectres look the way they did in the original PC version. Level fixes courtesy of Wavy. 3 drawing modes, always run option, and some changes for the 2.0 version. Network support, auto map, smooth scale, and like Doom 2 map specials. Okay, I mean, they've been working on changes for a while, so it's pretty cool to see that. That is very, very cool on them to work on a port and give the 32X some good respect. So, the other one that I'll bring up is Doom Core. So, Doom Core came about in 2011. And this is a game that I actually gave a chance in about 2014, 2015. And actually, that holiday season, the Christmas holiday season of 2015, I went through that game and definitely had a blast playing through it. It was fun. It was really, really fun. And I didn't even know that a few years ago that they made a 10th anniversary edition that the WAD guy made, and that is actually really nice. For someone to go back to their original ideas and to go back to it and work on fixed stuff, work on the content and everything in between, and rework some of the levels and work on some ideas that might have been bad and then put in some new ones. Like, they did a really good job, this particular person. And that says a lot for the Doom community. It says a lot to what I think makes id a very, very nice company to deal with, because they want to see their fans continue to support Doom. They want to see better support altogether for their older games. That's why I think for the most part they haven't had to bother fans based on levels that they made for Commander Keen, Wolfenstein, Doom, Quake. They've showed tons of respect towards that and are not going to bother people that make original levels. That to me is one of the cooler things about people making these levels, and it's just, I'm a fan. I'm a fan for a reason. The original content altogether, I mean, it is something that I hugely appreciate. I really like what they're doing. It just, you cannot explain it to great detail, just how great that is. Actually, there was something I saw a while ago. I didn't watch the video of it, but was just bringing up Wolfenstein just a minute or two ago. Brutal Wolfenstein. So, there's Brutal Doom, which has been around for about 10 years, maybe a little longer. I actually want to look at that. When did that first come about? Okay, it's been in development since 2010. I thought it turned 10 last year. But, they're still getting updates for this as time goes on. That says a lot. But one of the other things going on recently is Brutal Wolfenstein. And as recently as May 6th, the Brutal Wolfenstein got a new mod, or a new update to Brutal Wolfenstein, adding new weapons, enemies, textures, gore, lots of it, maps from the original game being redesigned. So someone just made a new update. Okay, this is from, okay, the last one came about back in January. So someone's been working their way through remaking the original trilogy, which is pretty cool. I think people do want to see a modernized Wolfenstein. At least that's how I see it. Just taking a look for just a brief moment. That's all. But yeah. It just, like I said, the dedication to these fans is through the roof, and gotta applaud them. Really do. So, that about wraps up this episode of Geeks and Jocks. Like I said, this podcast is on anchor.fm. You can also find this on Spotify, Radio Public, and Google Podcasts. So on down those places, search for Geeks and Jocks. Plenty of content awaits. So with that, episode 115 of Geeks and Jocks. This is Ryan Sullivan. Hope to hear your listeners on the next podcast. Stay safe, stay protected, take care of yourself, take care everyone.